Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm
home. Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here, wherever you get your podcasts, or of course, 24 hours early on Patreon, so thanks for pledging with us if you do. My name is Kerry McIntosh, I'm joined as always by Mr. Finlay Martin. Finn, we're recording this maybe at one of our earliest times we have.
Yes, it's currently 9:02 on Thursday morning, so that's pretty early for us.
Yeah, usually we start at 10, maybe half 10. But we're going early today, so. I've not seen Blood and Guts in, so we're not going to be discussing any of that from last night. But there's lots of stuff going on in wrestling. I did want to ask you, Sondra and I just yesterday covered the John Cena debut from SmackDown on June 27th, 2002, where he cuts the Ruthless Aggression promo and has that match with Kurt Angle. I mean, it's maybe not a fair question to John Cena, but I just wondered, do you remember seeing him in that debut? And do you think he had in at that point? Could you foresee that he was going to become a big name, or was it a shock when he eventually went on to do what he did? You know, based on that first night when he came out and challenged Kurt Angle.
I mean, it's difficult, wasn't it? I think I described him as, do you remember the Natural Born Thrillers in WCW?
Yeah.
I thought he was wearing the Natural Born Thrillers attire. I think that was how I described him at the time in Power Slam. I mean, the thing about it is there's been so many examples of people who we thought were going to be stars, and then the company lost interest in 2 or 3 weeks or a month or whatever. And then they basically ended up going nowhere. And, you know, with Cena, it was really very difficult to tell that early. I mean, everyone credits, you know, the rapper gimmick with being the thing that saved his career the following year. And I think he was doing the rapping backstage, and either Stephanie or somebody in a position of power saw him do it, or someone told them that Cena was doing this gimmick and he was really good at it and it could be incorporated into an on-screen persona. And that was the thing that basically saved his career. The early match I remember was he had a match with Brock Lesnar, a title match.
Is that the one at Backlash 03?
I think it was. And Cena did not have a great night, and neither did Lesnar. And there was a lot of talk at the time that Cena had been pushed too far too quickly, or didn't have what it took. And there was a lot of talk then that he wasn't going to make it. And I think had he not become, you know, Cena, the Doctor of Thuganomics, I think he probably would have been chewed up and spat out. I think that's how his career would have gone. It was the gimmick that saved him, because he was never really very good in the ring. I mean, he just wasn't. And with the gimmick, that was the thing that people reacted to, wasn't it? It was his, you know, his promos when he's coming out, his raps. And that's what got him over. I mean, that was what created the support that convinced WWE to firstly make him US champ and then WWE champ in 2005. So, yeah, 2002, too soon to say, really. I think I saw more in Randy Orton than I did in John Cena. I mean, Batista was someone else who came in around about the same time. Obviously, the Deacon Batista gimmick was just dreadful. I mean, it was very nearly a career killer for him, but he somehow survived that. And I don't know whether I really saw that much in Batista either at the beginning. It took a while for him to really develop into somebody who you could see was going to become a star. I mean, it was his association with Evolution, I guess, that was really the turning point for him. I think most people would agree with that. And obviously, the Triple H feud in 2005 was the career-making series of matches that made him champ and a top star. But yeah, for Cena, you know, it was a strange time, Kenny, wasn't it? 2002. And it's felt like WWE had lost its Midas touch in terms of star creation. I mean, Lesnar, I mean, at the beginning, it wasn't really until the Rock match at SummerSlam that you realized he was going to make it. And there were moments there where he could have also gone backwards, but instead he continued going forwards. As we said in our King of the Ring review, had Lesnar not been with Paul Heyman, I think the outcome would have been very different. And obviously Cena didn't have a Paul Heyman at that point, did he?
No, but luckily he did have a Stephanie McMahon who, is that another story that she heard him rapping on the bus? And that
something
was how he,
like that, yeah.
Yeah, but she heard him somehow and she, so Stephanie's to blame.
Yeah, I mean, you know, let's give Stephanie credit for that. I mean, you know, Cena's career can be summed up in just a few words. Sold a lot of T-shirts. That's what should be inscribed on his, you know, his career's written, if anyone wants to sum it up in just a few words. I mean, that's it. Sold a lot of T-shirts.
A lot kinder than I thought your few words were going to be there, fan. Listen, let's move on to Ronda Rousey. You know, we have discussed the Ronda Rousey situation for months on the podcast about her lack of enthusiasm, her lack of interest. So maybe this explains a little bit of it. She was talking to Daniel Cormier on his podcast, the DC Check-In, and she revealed that when she returned earlier this year at the Royal Rumble, she was supposed to return as a heel. But after the initial crowd reaction in St. Louis at the Rumble, Vince changed his mind. She said Vince was like, well, they popped for her big, so she's a babyface now. She expected to be a heel on her first Raw appearance, but she was told, no, you need to smile, you need to stop being a bitch. And she wasn't happy about having to play a good guy. She said, I love being a bitch. It's my outlet for bitchery. And they're like, yeah, you got to pull it back a little bit. And she said that in terms of the crowd, she was expecting a similar response to her previous run. Says that she didn't get to properly enjoy the moment because at the Royal Rumble, because she said, I think I kind of missed out on really enjoying that moment because I was expecting the worst in people. I mean, how does she still not get it at this point? Like, it's wrestling. It's all.
I don't know.
How is she taking it so seriously? It's wild to me that she is, you know, she's been doing this now between her two runs. It's almost 2 years, you know, in reality, with all the time.
But she was a fan, wasn't she, before she entered this world? So, you know, she's not like, sometimes you'll see people who enter pro wrestling And you can tell they've done it because, you know, the sports career didn't pan out and this was something they could do potentially and make money from and, you know, have like a, it's sort of an unintended career because, you know, priority, because their first choice didn't work out for them. So this was their second choice. And they didn't really know much about pro wrestling until they entered this world. And it's a bit of a mystery to them.
Yeah.
Ronda Rousey was a huge fan. So she surely, or you would think, would understand what pro wrestling is and what is required of its performers.
I mean, do you think if she'd come back as a heel at Royal Rumble and they had continued that trend of her being a heel, do you think that this run would be looked on currently as any more successful than it is?
Well, the problem was, why would she be brought back as a heel when she was clearly going to be pitted against Becky Lynch or Charlotte Flair, who themselves were both heels?
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe they thought Charlotte was going to be the babyface in that scenario, but then Charlotte's never really been a great babyface.
She's got ice water running through her veins, that character. she makes Stephanie McMahon seem positively likable. I mean, that's saying something, you know, because, I mean, Charlotte's just, I mean, she has played face previously, but I don't think she's ever really connected with the audience. As a good gal, I just don't think she ever has. And, I mean, she could probably play it fairly well for a time, but I mean, her natural role, her whole persona that she's created for herself over the last, what is it, nine years now, is this, you know, she's wrestling's answer to Cleopatra. That's who she is to me. And she's just up there on a pedestal and it's all about her. All the attention is on her. You know, she is a narcissist. She is all about self-glorification. There is nothing likable about Charlotte Flair as a persona, as a character. So for Ronda Rousey to return and then become, you know, be such an effective, nefarious, villainous heel that she would turn Charlotte Flair babyface is nonsensical to me. And obviously Becky Lynch wasn't going to turn face because by January, she just felt like she was really embracing this new big-time Bex character. And the worst thing that she could have done at that point, you know, was turn babyface. And besides, she was already in this long-term storyline with Bianca Belair that was going to end at WrestleMania and did. So it was clearly going to be Ronda versus Charlotte, wasn't it? So I'm perplexed as to how these conversations even occurred. And, you know, what was Vince McMahon thinking, Kenny?
I mean, this is not one of his finest creative ideas. Because also, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but in wrestling history, it tends to be that if somebody's going to be a heel when they come back and they've been away for a long time, you let them on the first night get the babyface pop because they're going to get it regardless of what you do. And then maybe the next night on Raw or whatever, then you do the heel turn or whatever. But you have to let that react. I mean, there was just no way that Ronda Rousey was going to return at the Royal Rumble and people were going to boo her because, you know, they were excited to see her. I was excited to see her. I mean, long gone are the days, but I was. But yeah, crazy.
I don't know, let's give her credit, you know, for the I Quit match with Charlotte. I mean, that was pretty good.
Yeah, the I Quit match has been her one sort of thing you can stand up and go, that was great.
Yeah, I mean, she brought it on that night. I think she seemed like she was having a good time and she was enthusiastic to be there and dedicated to the match and wanted the match to succeed. And I feel like it did.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the match. That was the match that it was like the old Ronda Rousey was back.
Yeah,
that match.
Said it before, Kenny, what she needs is Bayley. And I hope Bayley returns at Money in the Bank this weekend or very soon afterwards. And I think Bayley could light a fire under Ronda Rousey. Mm-hmm. You know, and actually, I mean, you would think that is Bayley going to return as a heel? She really needs to, because as we know, you know, Bayley from accounts I mean, it wasn't exactly like, you know, an ultra dynamic character. And then she found herself as a villain and created this new persona for herself in association with Sasha Banks and was a huge success. So she's really got to be the heel.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think she could work very well with Ronda because we know Bayley knows how to put a match together. And we know Ronda needs someone to basically lead her through the match. And I think that could be the match that I think would be really good for Ronda. And I think she may also maybe find that she I think there is some enthusiasm buried deep inside of her for pro wrestling, but she needs to be in a scenario that really does inspire her. And I just feel like it's a cliche, but she doesn't feel like she's firing on all cylinders. Feels like something's misfiring there. And maybe Bayley could be, you know, the technician who could like go in there and, you know, fine tune that engine and get Ronda, you know, racing and, you know, burning it up again. Maybe that's the feud she needs. It's a feud I want to see anyway.
Yeah. I mean, Bayley, as far as we know, is cleared. And I mean, get her back. Get her back now. She is sorely needed in the women's division.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if she was at Money in the Bank. I mean, really, this Natalya match doesn't feel like a premium live event worthy matchup, as we discussed earlier this week. I mean,
Ronda Bayley does feel like a big SummerSlam match.
It does. Absolutely, it does. And I mean, it's a foregone conclusion who's going to win on Saturday. And I think if Bayley makes an appearance after the match and beats Ronda down, I think a lot of people will say, well, you know what? We were willing to put up with Ronda Rousey versus Natalya, you know, in return for Bayley's comeback, beat down of Ronda, you know, and the potential that this feud and series has. I mean, I'd like to see Bayley become champ at SummerSlam. She doesn't have to defeat Ronda Rousey cleanly, of course, but I think that would be a way of prolonging the feud. And also, you could then work Charlotte Flair into it as well. If Bayley was champion and then you've got like, you know, three-way match, or I'd quite like to see that Clash at the Castle, maybe Ronda versus Charlotte versus Bayley. I mean, that I think would be a big match. I think would go down well with the UK fans.
Yeah, for sure. Well, listen, let's move on to Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is in the news because obviously he's out at the moment. He's injured. He's been out with a variety of injuries. He's got, I think it was like a torn something in his shoulder, a hernia, knee issues. So he was on his Twitch channel and he had this to say about his injury and being injured. He said, "If I get another major setback, that's it. That's it. I'm done. I can't do this ever again. Two times, three times a day, really painful rehab, not even knowing what it's going to be like when I get back in the ring. I have no clue. It's scary, actually. You see people, they come back to the ring and you're just happy to see them back. There's a different kind of expectation put on me, and I think that anything less than what they're expecting, which is already unrealistic, is going to lead to a lot of ridicule, which is what I get every day anyway. You can probably understand and imagine how difficult it is, struggling twice, three times a day, trying to get things to work that maybe never worked before, and trying to reroute things in your brain to get around the things that aren't healing. People think, Kenny is hurt, he took time off, snap your fingers, I come back and I'm 100%. Life doesn't work that way. Bodies don't work that way. Athletes don't work that way. It's very difficult to formulate a plan and to execute it. We'll see how I do. Because I think he also had like imbalance problems towards the end, where he couldn't feel balanced in his brain, which is scary. So, I mean, what do you think of this? I mean, he's basically saying if something else happens, he doesn't think he can come back. I mean, is the expectation of Kenny Omega coming back going to be so high that he kind of needs to come back at the same level he was before? Or do you think that he could come back and do a lesser version of what he did before and still get the job done?
I mean, I know Ric Flair had a similar condition. I think it was actually during his series of matches with the Ultimate Warrior in WWF back in 92, I think it would have been, where he was having a problem with his ear and he was having problems with his equilibrium. I mean, with Kenny Omega, I mean, he could come back and do a different style. Would people be disappointed? Probably at first, because there's a certain expectation from an Omega match that he's going to do all these, you know, ballet style moves and throw himself over the top rope and, you know, this high speed, you know, V triggers and, you know, suplexes and the high energy long matches. I mean, if he came back and did something different, people at first might not like it, but in time they would probably accept it. If you go back and look at someone like Keiji Muto, the great Muta, he radically changed his style about 20 years ago in Japan because his knees were so far gone that he couldn't do all that high-speed, high-risk stuff anymore. He had to work a mat-based style, and he had to be very clever with his matches and make all the little things mean more. Same with Jushin Liger. He was, at the end of the 80s, early 90s, he was wrestling's preeminent flyer, and, you know, in the 2000s, he consciously changed his style and went to a more of a ground-based approach, so there was fewer bumps and less movement in his matches. So, I mean, I think Omega could change his style, but I guess the question is, does he want to? And also, in AEW, people expect constant movement. That's what AEW fans want, just constant bumps, kick out after kick out, and just all action. So would the AEW audience really go for a more of a subtle approach, you know, with more of a psychology based approach where you're building you're telling a story in the ring and you're piecing it together and you're creating, you know, a match with texture, you know, would they go for that? Probably, maybe they would do, but that's almost like a re-education process in itself. And it's not just that immediate gratification, violence, huge bumps, you know, constant brawling and just, you know, the AEW style. So I don't know. I mean, it's up to him, really. I mean, if he can afford to retire or afford to go part-time, just wrestle occasionally, then I would urge him to do so. I mean, I'm a great believer in pro wrestlers not wrecking themselves, you know, because there's this post-wrestling life that they're going to have. And if you're in constant pain every day in your, you know, from your early or late or early mid or late 40s onwards to the day that you shuffle off this mortal coil, then that's no life. And if you can afford to withdraw and do something that's going to give you really good quality of life post-wrestling, then I would urge every wrestler to do it. You know, that's my philosophy on it. You know, because I've read enough stories of broken down wrestlers, you know, I've met broken down wrestlers, and it's not a pretty sight, Kenny. And, yeah. You know, the really sad thing is that fans, when someone's out of sight, out of mind, fans aren't really going to be that bothered. Fans aren't really going to, you know, they're not going to be supporting these wrestlers financially, you know, and these wrestlers, I think, have got to think of themselves and their lives and their quality of life post-wrestling. And it sounds to me from that quote that you just read out, Kenny, that Kenny Omega is already doing that. I mean, the rehab sounds hellish for him. Yeah. And absolutely awful. And I mean, if this statement is genuine and it sounds it, then sounds to me like he's already got one foot in retirement. Sounds to me like he has. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be difficult for him because he's so used to being this, you know, very, you know, more is more, constant stuff type of wrestler. And I think it will be difficult for him if he has to change that. But I think that he is, I mean, he's one of the best. I think he will adapt to whatever he needs to adapt to. And the thing that AEW used to have that don't really have anymore is in the early days when Cody would have his big matches, his matches were always slower than everybody else's. And they would have kind of more, you know, build to a spot than most of the other stuff. And I think if Omega was to become that, I think in time fans would probably quite enjoy that was like a different style of match they're going to see. So I think Omega will be fine if that's what he chooses to do. But it might also be that he just doesn't want to take that risk. You know, if he doesn't think he can do a 45-minute match anymore, then he might feel it's not worth it. But I think it's definitely worth him doing a part-time schedule and doing some big matches and changing his style if he can, because the AEW fans love Kenny Omega, and I think that they would want to see him back if he thinks he can still do it to a level where he's happy with. You know, it's like Steve Austin used to say towards the end, that he wouldn't want to come back unless he could do enough that he thought it was he could be Steve Austin. And then obviously towards the end he couldn't be, but I think Omega's probably the same. He's got an expectation level for himself, and I think in his mind he has to be able to hit his expectation level first and foremost before he decides to come back.
Yeah, it's like a professional pride thing, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, you've got that pride in your performance, that your own expectation, your expectations of yourself are so much higher than anyone else's.
Yeah.
And if you can't reach them, then you don't want to disappoint yourself, you know, above all, as well as, of course, the fans and your peers and management, whomever. But I mean, I think any wrestler or athlete who's going through this rehab, and he's obviously been out for a long time now, hasn't he? He hasn't wrestled for many months. And the fact that he's still in pain, it's still a real chore for, no, it's still very difficult for him, this whole rehab process. He's still very challenging, even at this point, many, many months into it. You can understand why he would be growing disheartened. So maybe he's just, you know, venting a little bit. And when things become a little easier, which I'm sure they will, then, you know, maybe his attitude towards it will change. You know, I always used to have it with Power Slam. You'd finish an issue and you think, oh, God, that was so difficult. And like, oh, next month, oh, I can't put myself through that again. And then the very next day, you'd be on with the next issue. You know, it'd be like, and then something good had happened, or you get that great interview, or you come up with a really good idea for an article, or you get these amazing pictures through, and you'd suddenly be like enthused again, and you'd feel like the issue was really coming together, and you're like, oh, I can't wait for this issue to come out, and the whole cycle would just repeat. But I mean, you know, anything difficult requires an amazing amount of effort to do it successfully, and there are obviously consequences to that. But sometimes the end result is worth, you know, the sacrifice. And I think he'll be back. I'm sure he will. And hopefully he'll have the foresight, you know, be prudent enough to change his style so he's not taking as many risks.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, the temptation, of course, to seek the pop by doing that huge stunt is very strong in pro wrestlers. So it requires, I think, a lot of discipline to just tone it down and do fewer big moves that are likely to be injurious. So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
And then just the last thing before we go is this week is the anniversary, the 24-year anniversary of the Hell in a Cell match with Undertaker and Mick Foley. And I just thought it'd be fun to quickly ask you, do you think if you take that match out of Mick Foley's career, if you take that spot out of his career, does a lot change?
I think he does, yeah, I think so. I mean, he was already obviously a huge star. But I mean, that's a match that that changed everything for him, wasn't it? And I mean, in some ways, you know, a lot of people were really worried when it happened that it was going to encourage more people to do spots like that in their matches. And obviously we have seen a lot of crazy things. But I mean, it didn't really open the floodgates in the way that a lot of us feared it would at the time. And, you know, that was the flip side to it that Foley had taken this very real punishment to get over. You know, and he'd been criticized dating back to his first WCW run for taking vicious chair shots to the head and crazy bumps to the outside on the concrete and making it difficult for other wrestlers to get over by doing less and by doing things that were not going to be painful, they were not going to suffer genuine injuries from. I mean, you know, the famous Vader matches, you know, the power bombs on the concrete. I mean, a lot of people in wrestling were very uncomfortable about that because of the precedent that it set. You know, it's like, oh, right, so we've all got to now nearly kill ourselves to get over, you know, and to get a heel over and to, you know, build sympathy from an audience. And so a lot of people, including Ric Flair, very famously, a lot of people in wrestling were opposed to what Foley did. And, you know, the same certainly is true of the Hell in a Cell bumps. Once it emerged that both of them were planned, because for a while there, the one through the cage, there was this kind of smoke screen that, oh, no, that wasn't planned, the one through the cage. And of course it was.
And you still got to work people all the way to the end.
Well, I mean, that might not have been so bad had the chair not come down and smashed him in the face. That's what did the damage, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's insane even today when you look at it and all the stuff we've seen since. It still is maybe the most insane. Both of them just, I mean, those bumps are just, you watch it again and again and again. You go, how did he jump off? How did he get thrown off top of that cell and land the way he did? I know he's an athlete, but I mean, that could have, I mean, you're talking 3 or 4 inches in different directions, and any of that could have gone a lot worse for him.
Yeah, I agree. And also, I think it was Jim Ross who just moved out of the way at the last moment. And that was really close as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I remember a few years ago that somebody in the US had tweeted an article about it, and they'd said, you know, this time, 22, 23 years ago, Mick Foley got tossed off by The Undertaker. And Mick Foley responded going, "That means something different to my friends in the UK. Please don't say it like that."
That is pretty good. I mean, it was a career changer for him, no doubt about it, because he was quizzed about it so often, and he wrote about it and spoken about it so many times. And it was a strange match, wasn't it? You go back and watch it, and the drama is, because it's so real, isn't it? Even though obviously these spots were set up, there was real punishment. He suffered real injuries. It was clearly not selling. He was clearly KO'd and clearly in a lot of pain. And that, you know, that tooth really was sticking in his nose. And, you know, it was not, he hadn't bladed. It was hardware juice, and everything about it had this unbelievable realism, all this believable realism, or kind of unbelievable believable realism, maybe. And but I mean, yeah, I remember it at the time, and we covered it in the magazine, and obviously I spoke to Foley about it just a few weeks later. I think that was his first in-depth interview about the Hell in a Cell match, the Power Slam he generously gave to Power Slam. Quite a story behind that interview, which people I'm sure will be aware of. And it was quite something, quite a match. But yeah, had he not done that, had he not had that match, I think he still would have been a huge star. But I don't think he would have been the star that he became. And maybe they wouldn't have made him champion later that year, Kenny.
I think it definitely played a part. And I think if he was to sit down now, even he said it before, he wouldn't take it back. But thankfully, people didn't choose to do it again.
Exactly. And when he had the match with Triple H the following year, and he took a similar bump, it was there was obviously risk assessments done, and the whole way it was set up. Much safer in such a way that he wasn't likely to suffer any real injuries. I'm sure his missus insisted on it.
Well, listen, that's all the time we've got for today. We'll be back on Patreon with an overrun where we're going to talk about the 20 years of Impact Wrestling. So do head over to our Patreon, patreon.com/insidetheropes, to check that out. And Finn's new What Else Is Going Down, where he covers Jeff Hardy, Vince McMahon, Shotzi, and much, much more. So do check that out. And then today is the day, Thursday, that Inside the Ropes magazine issue 22 is available, with Roman Reigns on the cover. So insidetheropesmagazine.com is where you can pick that up, or in your local WH Smith store. And if you have an even more local news agent, go and ask them to stock it, and they will, because it's a guaranteed sale for them. So Finn, I will look forward to basically talking to you again in 30 seconds. So
Indeed. Yes, people, please check out the magazine with Roman Reigns on the cover. Stunning cover photo.
Yes.
So I think there's some good stuff in there. But, you know, hopefully people will give us a chance if you're not already a reader.
Indeed. So I want to thank you for all your support, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.